This is not your average real estate podcast. When Sam Newell started his career, making his first six figures seemed like an impossible mountain to climb. Now, he's a seasoned real estate pro with over $350 million in real estate transactions so far. Sam's opening up his playbook and sharing the mic with his inner circle of experts, partners, and investors. Together, they'll dive deep into the biggest wins, losses, traumas, betrayals, and more that have made up the path to unparalleled success. It's time to get leveraged with Sam Newell.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to be here with my good friend, Deb. And Deb, the reason we're here is, first of all, you're an amazing human being, and I could tell that. Some people have a light about themselves. They have I feel like I judge people very well. When I say judge, I can tell what type of person you are, and I'm drawn to people who have a very happy, positive, powerful spirit about them. And when I met you and John, your husband, I was like, wow, these are people I want to be around. And, you know, a lot of your friends are very similar. I've known a couple of your friends for years, and they're very similar. The sign here, good vibes only. Like, we've only gotten really great, powerful, good vibes from you. And I want you to read for me really quick something that really inspired me. It made me tingle when I read it. And I said, I have to get Deb on the podcast to talk about this because there's a story behind it. You have an amazing story, life story, and lots we can talk about. But I specifically wanted to talk because this really reflects my thought of who you are as a person. When I read that, I'm like, that's Deb for sure. That's Deb and John for sure. So go ahead and read it for us, and I'm excited.
Also, thank you for having me on.
Of course.
This is an honor.
Yeah.
What is most important always involves the people around us. Never let a problem to be solved become more important than a person to be loved. So when I saw that, you know, I was kind of going through a little bit of a judgy time in my life, some experiences that happened that threw me into judgment, which I think everybody goes through those judgments. I mean, we're meant to judge.
Yeah.
That protects us. Anyway, and then the thing that I said was, I found myself this week in a lot of judgment, something I try hard to stay away from. It is so easy to fall into it. While in breathwork tonight, I kept hearing release judgment. I realized how important it is to love people, even when they think completely differently than I do. Love people who dress different, speak different, raise their kids different, or worship differently than I do. Everyone is doing what they feel is right for them, and who's to say it's not? I found myself feeling negative today and a weird sense of fear. Tomorrow I will wake up with a newfound love for everyone around me despite our differences. Love is beautiful.
Wow. That gave me goosebumps again, Deb. Thank you for sharing that. And that really explains a journey that many people in my life are on right now. They're exiting relationships, friendships, marriages, churches, all sorts of different business relationships, where people really think they're right and they judge wrongfully. We have to judge. We have to judge between good and bad. It's part of human nature. But judging unfairly or passing judgment is something that we know very, very well. It's part of our culture. It's a huge part of our culture. And when I read that, I was like, man, like something's going on with Deb, or she had an experience with someone. And what an amazing response. Because most people do not respond that way. Most people, I mean, if you look at the news, you look at politics, everyone's like, I'm right. Go to hell.
Yep.
You're wrong. I'm right. And my thought process, and I have different religious and political views. I'm like, you know, that's true for them. They have a very different experience than I do. And there's so many different truths. You have an extremely different life experience than I do. And yet we can still love people.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the part that people miss. They want to be right. They forget to love.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about that quote that you just so beautifully, did you write that on your own, by the way? Was that just you?
Okay. I just wrote the after. I saw the quote. It sparked something in me, and I wrote the after part of it. And for me, I mean, I grew up in a very wealthy area, and we were one of the poorest people in the area. And then our story got out. So I was raised with a mother that was severely abused as a child. She never got the help that she needed. Mm-hmm. And a father that was not emotionally available to her at all. She never had what she needed to grow and to overcome the things that she's dealt with, and she still hasn't. She's a beautiful woman. I love everything that she did for us. But growing up, I'm an observer. And so even as a little child, I would watch her and think, I don't want to be like that. Mm-hmm. Or I would watch her and think, I want to be like that.
Wow.
Because she does have incredible, amazing attributes that have made me who I am today. She is not in my life at all right now.
Wow.
And nor will she be probably until she dies.
Sounds like we have a very similar story.
Yeah. So
interesting.
But I have nothing but love for her. I understand her journey.
Yeah.
And she has, there's no hold. There's an emptiness where she should be, but there's no negative connotations there anymore because of the work that I've done on myself.
That's so powerful.
Absolutely powerful.
People are doing the best they can with what they've got, and you have to love them despite their religion, despite their sex or their sexual preference, or despite what they do in life, if they hurt you or not. And it's been a really interesting journey. I have a couple friends who are very, very religious still, and they see my journey as very negative because I drink alcohol now and I got a tattoo and I'm not married to Betty Jo. We're living together. And yet I've seen it as like just a spiritual awakening, and my soul is growing in ways that it never would have.
Yeah.
And so, long story short, I feel like I was just caught up in a very dark, restrictive mindset that I'm still learning and opening up. And it's only been 3 years.
Yeah.
It's been since 2021.
Wait, you've only been out of the church 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
And I have friends, family, people who really are not okay with it, and neighbors.
Oh, that's okay.
And everything. And also, what's great at knowing internally, me and Betty Jo are on this journey together.
Yeah.
Of huge growth. You know, we have a therapist who helps us grow in huge ways.
I love her energy.
Oh, she kills it. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's awesome. Sweet girl.
She's a good person. You guys are definitely meant to be together.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, I think that a lot of people, I mean, wherever you're born into is the religion that you take on, and that's your roots, and we're the only people that have all the knowledge, you know?
It molds the way you think.
Absolutely. Right? And even as a little girl, I just remember being in church thinking, how can we be the only people that have all the knowledge? It never really settled with me. But the thing with me and religion is I love the church. Like, I love what it gave to me. I love the service opportunities that it provided. We had 4 kids that served a mission.
Yeah.
My husband served a mission. I taught many, many, many Sunday school lessons that I, in my heart, felt they were amazing.
Yeah.
You know, the stories of Jesus, you don't get a better example than Jesus Christ.
Love and service and charity.
Absolutely. But not only that, he was a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
He came to earth and he couldn't stand the Pharisees.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't like all that bullshit.
Yeah.
That they were professing.
Which is ironic.
Why couldn't I take more steps on the Sabbath? Or, you know, all the little things that he was like, no, what? You know, like a couple of my favorite stories, you know, about Jesus that I'll forever be grateful for is when he's walking on the street with crowds of people around him and he feels a woman touch his robe.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around and says, who touched me? I felt, and I'm going to get this completely wrong, but this is how I imagined it, is energy left me.
Yeah.
Who was that? And for me, when I'm hearing these stories of Jesus, I don't care if it's Mormonism or Baptist, or I don't care what religion it is.
Mm-hmm.
I love Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And I love everything that he stands for,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we are so busy in our lives with so many people around us that all of us are too busy to even notice when someone touches us or when someone needs help.
Yeah.
So that story resonated with me. So many stories resonate with me.
Absolutely.
When the adulteress is getting stoned and he walks over and says, you know, whoever doesn't have any sin can cast the first stone. This is what I loved. He doesn't say, how many times did you commit adultery?
Yeah.
Tell me the details.
Mm-hmm.
He sat down, he wrote something in the dirt, and then he says, woman, where are thine accusers?
Mm-hmm.
Looks around, he says, go your way.
Yeah.
Sin no more.
Yeah.
But if you do, we'll forgive you again.
For sure.
And for me, like, the stories of Jesus resonated so much. Where did I learn those? In the Mormon church.
For sure.
The Mormon church has a great setup. I have zero negative things to say about the Mormon church. It just doesn't fit with my lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, for
but
John
so
and
much
I,
of it does.
So much of it does.
Yeah.
And I taught my children that, but
yep.
I taught my children because, I mean, these are things that I thought when I was a little child.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know if I like that. So a lesson that I was sitting in as a little child. Now, I had an abusive childhood.
Oh, wow.
And which I love now. Like, mm-hmm. there is not one thing that is a victim in my life. Every single thing that has happened in my life has become a stepping stone for growth,
mm-hmm.
including the abuse that I suffered. Which, I mean, when you say, oh, it wasn't as bad as Betty Jo's or this wasn't, I don't compare abuse. I mm-hmm. don't really care.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing with your abuse?
Right.
Are you becoming a victim? Or are you using that as a stepping stone to become a greater person to help somebody?
Yeah.
For me, my abuse has created the stepping stone that I can say, I resonate with that. I understand that. Yeah. Now, what are we going to do with it?
You can help some people with
absolutely.
That.
You can help everybody.
That's what we're doing right now.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I did not want to play the victim card, which this is a whole nother story. I was allowing victim stuff to come into my life in different ways, which I had to overcome, you know, but my childhood, I actually am grateful for.
Yeah.
So I'm living in this childhood where I was sexually abused.
Oh, wow.
And you know, not, I mean, my mom and dad didn't know how to handle that because they didn't have the tools necessary to handle their own childhoods and their own, right. you know, stuff. So I don't have any resentment towards my mom and dad at all.
Wow. How old were you?
Gosh. I don't know when it started. My first recollections were about 6. I know it was before then. You know, and for several years, you know, this happened to me and my older sister.
Oh, wow.
And so for me, you know, when I'm sitting in a Mormon class as a teenager,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher passes around a piece of gum and has everybody touch it and step on it and then says, this is you if you commit sexual sins.
Right.
As a little girl, I'm going, I'm a used piece of gum.
Holy shit.
No one's going to want me. And that didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
You know, but regardless of that, that's how I was feeling.
For sure.
Of no one's going to want me.
Which is so wrong.
It's so wrong.
So messed up.
And I didn't want my children. So as a little girl, I would look at my family. I would look at what was going on. And I'm a manifester. I was a manifester as a child.
Wow.
And I used to think, my children will only know love.
I love that.
I will show up for my children. I will listen to my children. I will hear what they have to say. I will respect them. I didn't feel respected as a child.
Right.
It was go away. Go, you're obnoxious. You're loud. You know, be quiet. Go away. You know,
shame and guilt.
Shame and guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a little girl. And I used to draw pictures of my children. I used to draw pictures of my husband. I used to visualize what that was going to look like. And I can tell you, I am living what I visualized as a child.
Wow.
Which is super powerful.
That's amazing.
Then when I was about 14, my grandma, I was at her house and she had a book called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Nice.
And I asked her if I could take it. I devoured it.
Yeah.
And the entire time I'm thinking, yes, yes, this is truth. This is what I want. This is how I want to raise my kids. This is how I want to be in society. To this day, this is the best book that I have ever read.
Amazing.
I paid my children to read this book.
Wow. Let people save face. That was one of my favorite quotes
absolutely.
From that book. Let people save face.
Absolutely. And wow. so as a little girl, you know, 14 years old, I wanted that.
Yeah.
And then when I was 16, you know, I mean, I had been having sex with my first boyfriend from 15 to 16. We had just mm-hmm. broken up.
Mm-hmm.
Again, on that used piece of gum,
mm.
I met my husband, John.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, he's never going to want me.
Yeah.
He's so good. He's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. His energy is so bright. No way is this man going to want me.
Yeah.
And we started getting close, and we were laying out on our tramp one night, and I said, I have to tell you some things that might change our relationship.
Wow.
I'm not a clean person. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
And I started telling him about, you know, I've had sex with a boy. That night he went home and he wrote me a poem that was the most beautiful poem I'd ever written in my life. And I cried.
Yeah.
He didn't care about that.
That's amazing.
He literally plucked me up and put me on a pedestal and has never once let me even put a toe down.
Wow.
He didn't care about that. Not at all. Never
cared about who you were as a person.
He just felt who I was as a person.
Yeah.
He only saw beauty. He only saw perfection. And he has only treated me as if I'm a perfect person.
I love that.
And when you treat somebody as if they're perfect, they become perfect.
Yeah.
Regardless of the mistakes, like perfection is mistakes.
Sure.
Perfection, you know, when I had my daughter, I'm in the hospital and I'm holding this little girl who I was scared to even give birth to. Mm. And everyone left and it was just me and her. And I'm crying and tears are rolling down onto her cheeks because I am so scared to raise a little girl in a world that is sexually abusive.
Yeah.
How am I going to protect this perfect little girl?
Mm-hmm.
And John's stepmom walked in, who was a hypnotherapist. Mm-hmm. She's one of the most beautiful mentors that I've ever had in my life. And she walked in and she said, what's the matter? And this is 29 years ago. And I said, I am so scared that I won't be able to protect this little girl. She grabbed my arm and she said, I'm going to tell you something. And I said, okay. She said, what you fear, you attract. Only see her as perfect. And she will be.
Wow.
And when she said it, goosebumps came over my entire body. And I looked at her and I said, that is truth. And I looked down at her and I decided right then and there, you will always be perfect to me.
Wow.
And all six of my children, I have only seen as perfect. A perfect naughty two-year-old. A perfect sassy teenager.
Yeah.
A perfect rebellious 18-year-old, because that is perfection. You should be wanting to pull away from your family at this time.
Yeah.
You know, if you understand humanity and how we're supposed to be, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And so I only, even to this day, I see them as perfect.
Wow.
And they are. You know, in my eyes, they are. Yeah. They can do no wrong in my eyes.
Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. As you're speaking, I'm thinking about my daughter, Heidi, my first
How
born.
Old is she?
She's turning 11 this year.
Okay.
And I had very similar thoughts. You know, how do I protect this little girl? I know what people are capable of.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the beautiful things about this journey. I feel like I started 3.5 years ago, but Betty Jo has four daughters. So I have a daughter and four basically stepdaughters and my little boy, Liam. And loving them and treating them as they're perfect. I mean, I'm going to take that home today and start that.
Oh, yeah.
And I read a parenting book. You know, the more you compliment the kid, your children, and love them unconditionally and treat them well, the less they act out, usually. Yep. And, you know, so I read that book, and I'm paraphrasing terribly, but smile when you discipline your kids. Don't have an angry face. It hurts their ego. It hurts their self-worth. And so if you can build their self-worth,
yeah,
rather than destroy it as an angry, out of control parent who is forceful instead of loving. And like you said, you ask them, how do you feel? And they're teaching you. That's a very different experience for your child.
And absolutely.
And I'm not perfect at it at all.
No one is.
And I feel like I backtracked a little bit during the divorce, and I'm really doubling down on Heidi and Liam. And then, you know, my four stepdaughters, like, let's learn through this. Let me be patient. Let me ask and talk to you about your opinion. And also building them up. And that's one thing I feel like I've done very well is affirmations and compliments and unconditional love and trying to force them to love themselves and see how awesome they are.
Yeah. I mean, that will come a time. So my parenting thing for me is I kind of do the 80-20 law. Not kind of. I kind of I'm going to take out the word kind of. I do the 80-20 law, sometimes 90-10, where my children, number one, they knew I loved them.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of the time, love, create amazing memories with them. 10% of the time, I'll kick your fucking ass.
I love that.
And I won't feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
You know, we had four rules in our home. And I would tell my kids, you live by these rules or you can pack your shit and go live in foster care. It's a privilege to live in our home.
Yeah.
So
I love that.
You're going to keep the rules of my home.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to keep them, go ahead and leave.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Here's a list of foster moms. Yeah. You know, I'll help you pick one.
Yeah.
You are welcome to leave at any time. Of course, they're not going to because we created incredible memories with them.
And so much love.
And so much fun and so much love.
Mm-hmm.
But number one, you're going to be respectful, not just to me, but to your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
When someone says no, you stop.
Yeah.
You know, if I ask you to do something, you respond to me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ignore me. Number two, you're never going to lie to me. Because when you lie, you don't trust yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't trust anybody around you. I can't stand lie.
Yep.
I don't lie. I've never, ever, ever lied to my husband. Never.
Wow.
And he's never lied to me. We have a very, very open, honest relationship where there's that trust, which has made it possible for us to live the marriage that we live.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't lie. So respect, never lie. Grades. Your only job as a child to get good grades.
Yep.
And we're going to provide everything, tutors, help, for you to get good grades.
Yeah.
And then if you do get good grades at 16, you get a car. You know, so there's things that you get if you fulfill these obligations.
Right.
And number four, curfew.
Okay.
There is a time for every age that you need to let me know where you're at. That's it.
Yeah.
Those were the only four rules that we had.
Let's go back to the lie part.
The lie part.
Because that is impossible for most parents. And before I tell you why I think that's impossible for most parents to demand of their children, it's impossible for most children to not lie to their parents. But tell me a little bit about why you think that may be difficult for parents of a maybe don't have as good of approach as you. I'm just curious of what you think, why you think more parents and kids don't have that type of relationship where they can just tell the truth and be accepted.
Yeah. Well, number one, I mean, telling the truth is a very vulnerable thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're raised in a religion where you've got all these rules and you're not going to live a celestial life if you do this or you do that or you do this, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like for me, you're going to have sexual feelings.
Yeah.
I always tell my kids, if you're gay, be gay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to love them no matter what.
Yep.
Like if you kill someone and you go to prison, I'm going to love you the same. I'll come visit you.
Yeah.
Every single week, I'm going to come visit you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to love you no matter what. No matter what you do, no matter what you decide.
Yeah.
And so my kids knew unconditional love. And they still know unconditional love.
Yep.
You know, because I unconditionally love myself. My husband unconditionally loves himself. My children love themselves. And each one of my children are different. They're in different religions.
Oh, of course, they're so different.
We have some that are atheist, some that are very, very religious, some that are figuring out what their religion is,
mm-hmm.
or what their belief system is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and I don't care.
Thank you.
I don't care what you believe in. You're my child. I love you.
I love that. That's the exact answer I was looking for. And the exact opposite approach a lot of us get as kids. If you do this, how dare you? You're a terrible person.
Yeah.
Guilt,
yeah.
Shame, judgment, and conditional love.
Yep.
There's so many parents that can't do that. They think, hey, you disobeyed me. You don't do exactly what I think you should do.
Yeah.
And there's so much anger and hatred and disapproval and unacceptance and just lack of love. And that's why I think it's so impossible for most families to have that type of a situation where, hey, don't lie to me. I remember a specific example. I told a lie. It was a very small lie. I was like 16 or something. It was like what we did that night. And I was trying to hide it from my mom and my stepdad. And finally, I told him the truth. He's like, you don't have to lie to us. I'm like, we don't care that you did. And my mom was like, yes, we do. Just lost her mind. And what am I going to do after that? Yeah. I'm never going to tell them the truth.
Right.
And so what I try really hard with my kids is I'm like, you're not in trouble until you lie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what you do.
Oh, I encourage masturbation. I encourage those.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful step to getting to know yourself.
Part of the human reality.
Which creates a beautiful sexual relationship.
Yeah.
Where when a marriage has a beautiful sexual relationship, like my husband and I have.
Yeah.
Oh, it is phenomenal.
And just so our listeners understand a little bit more who you are, I mean, we're jealous of your relationship and in a good way, because we see how beautiful it is. We see how accepting and full of love it is. And it was funny when we met you, we spent some time with you guys. And I was like, Betty, they're the type of parents we want to be, right? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, they're the type of couple we want to be like, right? Mm-hmm. And Betty and I have known each other next month for 3 years.
Okay.
Dating seriously for almost, you know, 2.5 years. And, but yet we were thrown into parenting together immediately. Right,
that's hard.
She had a depressed 16-year-old when I met her. And we've been trying to help this girl so much. And we've had to morph how we parent, because we were brought up the not great way that we just explained. And we're trying to become better, more loving, accepting parents. And she's actually gay.
Yeah.
And now she's not. And we're like, we don't care.
Yeah.
And she came out to us and we're like, yeah, we knew that.
Was gay and now she's not?
She's not really sure. She's exploring who she is. She's figuring it out. She's dating a boy right now.
This is the thing. She doesn't have to figure that out. No. Like, I don't know what I am yet.
That was our whole point.
I just turned 50. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary yesterday.
Congrats, by the way.
Thank you.
I forgot to say that. Dang it. Thank you. I was going to say congrats.
But I don't know who I am yet.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I am, and I want to write a book called Let Go of the Branch That Is Drowning You.
Wow.
Because so many of us hold on to these branches on the side of a river, mm-hmm. and we think this is right, and the water is just rushing at our face, and we hold on thinking this is right, mm-hmm. where if we let go and just float and be fluid, we'll go where we're supposed to go.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I'm not a lesbian, mm-hmm. and I'm not straight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I am.
Which is extremely common, by the way.
I am very fluid. I'm an energy person. So when people meet us, they think, oh, they're full swingers. We have a lot of swinger friends. Love them. Respect mm-hmm. their journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're not swingers.
Yeah.
I am an energy person, and I'm extremely, extremely picky who I share my life with.
Absolutely.
Extremely picky.
That's so important.
And our journey has been more spiritual and more beautiful and more connecting than we have ever been.
It's amazing.
And I did a podcast with Whitney Rose and Connie mm-hmm. a while back, and one of my concerned neighbors,
mm-hmm.
thank you,
mm-hmm.
told our bishop that they were concerned about me, and they decided that we needed to have a court to excommunicate us. I mean, we've been out of the church mentally for years.
Yeah.
And so they kept trying to get us to go to this court, and finally John said, Goodness. Hey, listen. We don't care what you do.
Mm-hmm.
We're not coming to a court. You do what you need to do. We have been happier.
They were so obsessed with what you guys were doing.
Obsessed. Wow. He said, we have been happier now than we have ever been. Not only happier, but we are on a spiritual journey.
Yeah.
That has changed our lives. None of our children are Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to help them not have any negative connotations to Mormonism.
Yeah.
Because that's your roots.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have any resentment. I don't have any regrets.
There's so much good, but I feel like I'm in the same position. Here's my opinion of the human existence. And this is what I've really concluded in the last 10 years. I started working with investors who, like you guys, were on these journeys and very successful. And I was touched by many of their lives, these power couples, I call them. And I formulated this idea as, like, every religion has great, great attributes, great teachings.
Yeah.
But there are principles of success and of human, your brain, how it creates happiness in your life. And what it is love and acceptance. And there's a few things that just, no matter what you're doing, where you're at in life, that's going to create happiness and success. Religions usually don't, in my opinion. And so I love this journey that you're on, because I had a very similar situation a few times where I've been able to grow. And I love that you guys have done it together. That's
absolutely
a beautiful journey.
It is such a beautiful
and
journey.
I think what you found is true spirituality versus religion.
And I think that religion for some people can be an incredible source of joy and hope.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people really need that. And I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes right back to the quote that you have to release any judgment of this is what's right for everybody.
Right.
Wrong.
Right.
Wrong. Some people need that hope and that guidance and it works for them. And I respect that.
Yeah.
I respect Mormons. I respect Catholics. Yeah. I respect Buddhists. I respect, like, even when our kids were young, wherever we would travel to, I would take them to that religion. Theology to me is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's caused the most pain
mm-hmm.
that anyone has ever experienced. I think it's caused the most wars.
Yeah.
But I also think that it's caused a lot of hope.
For sure.
And a lot of security for people. And if that's your journey, I respect you. Yep, you're good. I'll jump right back in where we left off. Yeah. So I respect whatever journey that you are on.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like, I would go teach Sunday school. And a lot of times, I was still rolling on Molly, which a lot of people are like, Molly.
Drugs. Oh,
Molly
my God.
Saved my life.
Wow. Tell me about
Molly
that.
Molly cured me and mushrooms, cured me of my childhood travesties.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let me pause you right there.
Okay.
I've been doing research for a friend of mine and a family member of mine about mushrooms, severe depression, mm-hmm. severe abuse,
yep.
and ketamine as well. I actually have a friend. We have a mutual friend who's done ketamine therapy. And they're illegal drugs.
Isn't that sad?
Illegal drugs. But yet,
and
there's
alcohol
pills.
Alcohol is legal.
Alcohol. And then the pills that my family member's on
right.
are legal. She gets, yep. them, she gets them from a doctor.
Yep.
And they've literally, my mother was dead in my arms last May
yeah.
as I was administering the naloxone. Started breathing again in my arms. And those are all legal drugs she got from a doctor.
Yeah.
So I've been researching for someone else. What can I help them do? Is it the mushrooms? Is it the Molly? Is it the ketamine? So I really want to dive deep into this. And for our listeners, I've been looking at it for a couple of family members who suffer from severe depression. And they have for years and years and years. And I've heard over and over these stories of people who will have these walls fall down in their mind, they describe
Absolutely.
It when they're on Molly or their ketamine journey where they K-hole with a professional or the mushroom trips. And there's a Stanford scientist I've been listening to on YouTube.
Yep.
And there's all these other scientists that are like the human brain. And again, this is how, like, kind of my journey as a human being the last few years, like what actually creates happiness and success and how do I put that into my brain? How do I create success and happiness for my
sure.
life? If you're struggling from depression, there are treatments, non-conventional, illegal treatments that are amazing and yeah. have been proven. Mushrooms been for thousands of years.
Yep.
People have been treating depression and
yeah.
PTSD.
Ayahuasca, peyote. Yeah,
yep.
there's a lot of things
yeah.
that have helped a lot of people. So for me, I had a therapist in San Diego where I went and did an asylum journey with her that changed my life forever.
Wow.
It has created who I am today.
Wow.
And what she said is the human brain will send off, what are they called? Neurons and we send off these neurons. I don't know
these
if I'm saying this.
These between the neurons.
That, and sometimes like we think the same thoughts over and over and over every single day.
Yeah.
And we create literal grooves in mm-hmm. our brain.
Like highways in the brain.
Highways that we can't get out of. And so these brain signals are just going down the same route every
yep.
single day.
Yep.
I'm unworthy.
Yep.
I'm not enough. I'm
it's called
this
programming.
And that.
You're
it's programming from a time we were little children, yep. babies, infants.
So let me pause
even
you there.
Generational.
What you're about pain. To talk about is called neuroplasticity.
Absolutely.
Yep. And this is why I tell my kids, do not do drugs and drink before age 25.
Yes.
I don't care what you do.
Yes.
But your brain is extremely neuroplastic and can be molded and programmed in an extreme amount. And they've proven that it kind of stops at age 25, unless you do a ayahuasca or a mushroom.
Yeah, I'm okay with my kids doing mushrooms. I've done it with them.
That's awesome. So tell me about, so you can reprogram your brain.
This therapist said to me, when we are thinking the same thought, it's just looping thoughts all the time. That's depression.
Yeah.
You do mushrooms and it's like you sledding down the same hill in the same spot over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Your sled won't go anywhere else. It's right. just going down one spot. You do mushrooms and there's a fresh fallen snow.
Wow.
And if you have the right therapist, they can reroute
yeah.
that neuron.
Yeah.
That little
that pathway.
Light.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your sled can go other ways and you can think yeah. differently.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me.
Wow.
And she said to me, one day we were sitting on the beach of San Diego. That's where she's a Pepperdine graduate. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, what is it that you get from calling your parents every week and getting nothing back? Mm-hmm. What is it that you get from giving everything to this person and getting nothing back?
Wow.
And I started crying and I said, I don't know. And my husband was sitting there who was very wise. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, the fuck you don't know. And she goes, do you want us to help you?
Wow.
I said, sure. And she goes, what is it about being a victim that you love?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, no. I am not a victim to my childhood. And she goes, oh, no. You have brought that into your adult life. What is it about being a victim that you love? And I said, nothing. I said, I am not a victim. And she goes, then fucking change.
Wow.
And right then and there, everything about my countenance changed. Mm-hmm. And John goes, holy shit, did you see that? And she yeah. goes, hi.
Wow.
And I said, hi. And she goes, you'll never be a victim again.
Holy cow.
And right then and there, I changed. Now, anything that happens in my life is no one else's fault. It's 100% mine. And when you own everything in your life, do you know how much power you have?
It's a lot of power.
When you don't say, she did this, mm-hmm. my mom did this, and so that's why I'm this way.
Yeah.
When you can say, I am who I am because of me. Mm-hmm. And no one else has any power over making me do something. Mm-hmm. That's true authenticity.
Wow.
That's true power. I don't blame anybody for anything in my life. I own every single thing that happens to me. Every problem that I have is there because of me. Either I want it, either I'm attracting it for something that I need to heal, mm-hmm. either I'm attracting it because I love the chaos of my childhood. Mm-hmm. Be aware of why you want things in your life.
Yeah.
And then you have power to fix it.
I love that. I don't know about our listeners, but I got goosebumps listening to that story. Have you read the book Psycho-Cybernetics?
No.
Definitely read it. And Psycho-Cybernetics.
Cybernetics.
I'll send it to you.
I don't even know what cybernetics is.
So it's the rewiring of the brain and is the study of the brain. And it's what your therapist did to you.
Yeah.
So in that book, it's written by a plastic surgeon who would take someone with a scar, disfigured face, perfectly repair their face. They'd look in the mirror and say, I'm still ugly.
Yeah.
And he would, you know, girl, get a boob job. Nope, they're not nice. They don't look good yeah. enough. Nose job, whatever it is. And they'd still feel like they weren't good enough. They'd still felt like they were ugly. And he said, you know, this is interesting. There's people who don't have as beautiful a face as you and they feel beautiful and yet you still feel ugly. So he started studying the mind and how people, you know, the thoughts you think and the story you tell yourself is true. Mm-hmm. And the most believable voice in the world is your own voice. And so he created a method where he would actually have people, when they had these self-deprecating thoughts or these negative thoughts out loud, you would say the word stop. And then you'd affirm what you actually want to believe about yourself. That's what your therapist did to you. She said, stop. Stop doing that. And she literally stopped your brain from thinking like that and rewired your brain. Yep. And so I read that book, I think when I was, must have been 2012. So 27. And extremely unconfident, extremely, extremely unconfident. No friends. I was not a happy individual. I was trying really hard. You know, same story as everyone else. Tough childhood, just trying to make it in life. And I read that book and I was like, I got to change who I am. I got to change how I think about myself. And I started doing that. And I started being a lot happier person with who I was. And I remember the owner of Edge Homes, good friend of mine, Paxton works for him.
Paxton Guyman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's in-house counsel now for Edge Homes. Mm-hmm. They invited me to work out with them. I was working out with them at the same gym for years at 5:30 in the morning. And I was so unconfident. Even after them inviting me, I would not go work out with them.
Yeah.
Little panic attacks walking next past them at the gym. Now, if I see you and John at the gym, I'll come and shoot the shit, say hi, give you hugs. Could not do that before. Could not make friends. And I started using what the book Psycho-Cybernetics teaches and started rewiring my brain a little bit, being a much happier person, saying I'm a happy, outgoing person. I'm still pretty introverted, but most people wouldn't know.
Oh.
And started working out with the owner of Edge Homes, who changed my life. He became a mentor and a friend of mine. Much older than me, you know, his sons are my age, and he became kind of a second dad, the dad I wish I had.
Yeah.
And, but without saying, stop, Sam, think something else. What am I going to think? No, you're outgoing. You're a fun guy. Because the thoughts in my head were, what are you going to talk about with these guys? You don't know what to talk. You're not funny. You're not cool. You're not likable. And instead I was like, no, I'm actually a cool, funny guy. And I'm a hardworking. And it turns out the owner of Edge Homes knew who I was. He knew I was a really hardworking real estate agent. That's why he invited me to work out with him. He knew I was, and he told me a story. He's like, the reason I invited you, Sam, is I already knew who you were. I knew you were busting your ass, and I respected that. And I was really disappointed when you didn't start working out with us right away.
Mm.
I was like, oh my gosh, like how self-defeating was I that I had this guy who was giving me multiple opportunities. I ended up being a top outside sales agent for Edge Homes for years. Had a great friendship, but I had to tell myself, stop, and then replace those bad thoughts with better thoughts. And I haven't had a mushroom journey or any journey like that, but it's the same principle. I had to rewire my brain. Yep. And I had to stop saying, you know, I'm not likable. I'm not worthy. I'm not a fun guy. I don't have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And
so I used to feel that way all the time.
Wow.
When I mean, John has this natural, uncanny ability to feel like he belongs.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just very confident. He doesn't need anyone's validation. He just loves who he is. But it's a humble love. When somebody truly loves who they are, it's not loud. It's very humble.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that is truly confident doesn't roll in and go, I'm the alpha male.
They don't need to.
Alpha males don't introduce themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just sit quietly. They let people shine.
Yeah.
You know, which that's what John does. And so I used to get this anxiety to even go into a party because in my mind,
I would not expect that.
Right. I wasn't worthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was a child, I was the kid that no one could play with.
Wow.
I was the poor, abused. It got out that my sister and I were sexually abused. No one could come to our house.
Yeah.
Everybody made fun of my sister, even my older sister, more than me.
Wow.
Because it got out some of the stuff, and these girls just relentlessly bullied her.
Wow.
Because of it. She's getting over it now because of the work that she's done. She's one of the most amazing people I know.
Mm-hmm.
She is my mentor for sure.
Wow.
And my little sister. But there was this sense of, I am not worthy. They only invited me for this. And I would tell John, I would want to cancel everything.
Oh, wow.
And while we were driving there, I'd say, I don't think I want to go. And he would stop and he would say, I want you to say this. I am worthy.
I love that.
And I literally out loud would have to look at him and say, I am worthy. And he did that so many times.
Wow.
Where I started believing it. I am worthy. I'm wanted there. People like being around me.
Yeah.
And now?
It's true.
I feel that.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel that. And if they don't, that's them. It's not me.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, you exude what you believe.
Absolutely.
You know, it comes off to everyone.
Yeah, but sometimes you exude, now I'm so aware of people that when I walk into a room and I see somebody that is just loud and obnoxious, which I used to be, mm-hmm. you know, and I still am sometimes just because that's my personality, but I'll look at them and I'll think they need validation. Mm-hmm. And the more you validate and the more you love that person, they become quieter mm-hmm. because confidence is actually quiet.
Yeah.
It's not loud and obnoxious and look at me and bragging and look at my car and look at this. That's not confidence.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a need.
That's an insecurity.
Exactly.
That they're trying to feel something. Exactly. You know, I drive a nice car. I love nice cars. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. Very rarely will you hear me talk about anything that I have.
Right.
Because there's always somebody that's got something way better than you. I do enjoy driving a nice car. John could drive a minivan. That's whenever we go someplace, he rents a minivan.
Yeah.
I'm like, a minivan? He's like, they're the best.
So convenient.
I'm like, but they're so, and he goes, no, I love them. Like,
that's funny.
I'm like, okay. You know, like I've kind of let that go because he could care less.
Right. He's confident.
He doesn't get it.
So hold on. Take me back to your life being saved by Molly.
Yeah. So my first journey in Molly, gosh, that's been 20 years ago.
Okay.
All of a sudden, after doing it several times, whenever I would do Molly, all of a sudden I was me without my ego.
Yeah.
So if you're around somebody that's doing Molly, I mean, even the way that you look at people changes.
Right.
Because it drops your walls and it drops your ego. And all of a sudden your heart is cracked open.
Right.
And I see people almost as God would see people.
Yeah.
Where it's just, God, you're beautiful.
Yeah.
Come here, tell me about you. Get in here.
Right.
You know, you're loving and kind and chatty. Like I've got a friend, oh my God, when he does Molly, he's this great big man that's just all masculine.
Yeah.
And when he does Molly, I see this 10-year-old beautiful little boy that just wants to talk.
Yeah.
And it is so beautiful. I just sit and smile the whole time he's doing Molly because he's just this beautiful person.
I love that.
That is masked with this ego to protect himself. He too had a hard childhood.
Oh, wow.
And he is just struggling through life, trying to find himself with this abusive childhood.
Yeah.
And when he does Molly, he's a 10-year-old innocent boy.
Well, let's back up a little bit. So my dad has his PhD from the University of Utah in clinical psychology. Mm. I don't know if you know this, but in the 90s, they were using Molly for therapy.
Absolutely, I do.
And they're actually getting ready to legalize it.
Yep.
So,
and mushrooms.
And they're already doing ketamine therapy.
Yep.
So for our listeners, what Molly does is it releases a large amount of serotonin into your brain. And I'm not a scientist. I don't have experience with this, but I've lots of friends that like to do Molly and I've researched it and also been around it. And so when you drop this large amount of serotonin into your brain, it literally breaks down barriers and walls, and people can be more authentic self because there's so many inhibitions, hurt feelings, ego. And when you hear people about doing mushrooms, same thing. It actually, mushrooms do almost the exact same thing in the brain that serotonin does.
Yeah.
Psilocybin does almost the exact same thing that serotonin
same
does.
Same with acid.
It brings LSD. Down all these walls. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I used to hear about raves and people dropping Molly or doing ecstasy. I'm like, you know, I knew nothing about it. And I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. Now that I've been around it, I'm like, there's a lot of people that do it for, it's literal therapy.
It absolutely is.
It's literal therapy. And I actually have a friend, a couple of friends, they're a couple, and they went to EDC last year, dropped Molly for the first time. Before they even entered EDC, they sat on the bench for 4 hours and they were getting ready to break up. And from what I understand is they had these hurt feelings and anger and stuff they could not let go of. And when those barriers were dropped, they were able to kind of meet in the middle. Their hearts, their souls met for the first time as a couple. And they said, I forgive you. Like, you really hurt me, but I forgive you. And I love who you are as a person. So I'm going to let that go. And they had been to therapy for like the last year. And therapy wasn't working. And until they were able to kind of break down their ego and really join their souls in a egoless environment, in an all-loving environment, That's really hard for some people. It's really hard for some people that have been traumatized or hurt by others.
Well, your ego's your protection.
Yeah. But it's not good sometimes.
Yeah.
It really, it's trying to protect you. Yeah. It's trying to protect you, but it really creates issues. And so that was interesting to hear about and hear how like, wow, like we really were able to just forgive and come together, and they're much closer now. And I think they've done it a couple more times, and it's amazing. Like I was amazed. And that's when I started researching mushrooms and Molly and ketamine therapy. Like, you know, it's very different than what you see on the news or you hear from the government, these drugs that are illegal. Well, now they're going to be legal, but I talked to my dad about it. You know, he's a great psychologist, very well respected and does a great job, in my opinion. It's free therapy for me, which I really appreciate. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, yeah, it breaks down walls. People with severe PTSD.
Oh yeah.
Like
soldiers.
Soldiers who cannot function are able to get through and move past. So it's the way I've heard it described is you literally have these barriers that your mind keeps going up against, and it creates an inability to get past and recover fully.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the Molly or the mushrooms come in and you move past these barriers, and all of a sudden your brain is being rewired and you can move past those trauma experiences or the anger or the hurt. And it's an amazing thing to me that it's illegal and looked down upon.
That's so sad.
And yet it helps so many people. And just like anything, alcohol, if you abuse it, of course it's bad. Of course it's bad. If you
And I like alcohol. Alcohol helps me not have social anxiety.
Yeah.
Which it's getting less and less and less as the older I get. And I think that this is the joy of aging. Like I just turned 50. I would never go back.
Yeah.
You know, we hang out with a lot of 20 in the 20s, 30s, you know, 40s. But every single person that I meet, one of the things that I love to do, I love to get to know their story.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a story.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has trials and hardships and things that make them who they are. You know, for me, like with marriages, if I hear somebody say, we never fight, I'm like, ew.
Probably don't talk either.
Ew. Ew. Okay. Yeah. Number one, who's repressing?
Yeah.
You know, who's got things that they're not talking about? Who is hiding their passions? One good thing about John and I, we share all of our fantasies with each other.
That's great.
Without any judgment.
That's great.
At all. Like I could share some stuff with you that you'd be like, whoa.
Let's hear it.
Whoa. I don't know if you'd want me to share those, but.
Over drinks, another
shot. Yeah. Yeah. Give me another shot. But, and I can say, ooh, that's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you want to try that?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do this? Or do you want to do that? Or, you know, but one good thing about us is we've never lied to each other.
I love that.
And we protect each other's vulnerabilities. And if I could say anything for a marriage, if a man knew how important it is and a woman knew how important it is for their partner to feel safe and validated and protected, it opens up your whole world to having whatever you want.
I love that.
You know, if you have those things, John has always made me feel safe. He has always protected me. He has always validated me in the best way that he can.
Yeah.
And I have blossomed into the person that I am now, which allows us to have the cake. This is my analogy that I always use.
Mm-hmm.
We have our cake that is beautiful and solid and perfect. And now we get to put frosting on it. And now we get to add sprinkles. Yeah. And roses and figurines and candles, whatever we want on it.
Right.
Or take it off and go right back down to the cake, which is where we're at right now.
Okay.
We're just bare cake right now. You know, I'm healing from some things that I need to heal from.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that we never will, you know, add sprinkles to our cake, because we probably will.
Sure.
But it's very fluid.
Okay.
It's very fluid. Like, it's hard to break a straw. It's super easy to break a twig.
Yeah.
When you're just concrete, this is how it's going to be forever.
Right.
You're going to break.
Right.
You're not going to be. But if you are a string or a straw and you're fluid, it's hard to break a fluid person.
Let me tell you a story. So I got divorced. I started dating this hilariously funny girl who was the perfect girl for me to date post marriage. And she would ask me like, well, what's your fantasy? Well, I'm like, I don't know. And I knew for sure what they were.
Yeah.
100% knew.
Yeah, but you're scared of that.
I wouldn't
That's
tell
vulnerable.
Her for months.
Yeah.
And she had all these hilarious fantasies. She wanted to be like Natasha, the massage therapist. And I was like, okay, that's weird. But whatever. I was like so thrown off. Like we have these role play. Like what? So it was this whole like this interesting journey. And she was so loving and accepting and also kind of forceful. She's like, no, like tell me.
Yeah.
Like we're going to do this.
And do I know this person?
No.
Okay.
No, she's, owe her a lot. I owe mm-hmm. her a lot. And I would not tell her. I was so freaking scared of being judged. So embarrassed because for years and years and years, I'd hear, that's gross. You.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not talking about, I don't have any like extreme fantasies, like nothing extreme. I'm talking about anything other than vanilla was extremely weird and gross.
Mm.
And finally I told this girl and we dated for 2.5-3 months and it wasn't quite right. But man, anytime I see her, I'm like, freaking love you.
Yeah.
Like you
Thank
changed
you.
My life. You were the right person.
That beautiful. She was authentic.
To me,
authenticity is true freedom.
Yeah. This podcast is going to go forever and I love it. This last year.
You can cut a lot of this out.
I think it's a lot of good stuff, but this last year we shrunk our friend group by a huge, huge amount of people who mistreated their spouses in front of us, who fought in front of us.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Mistreated other people. And I was like, we threw this huge party at our house and it was fun. And at the end of it, Betty and I were like, I don't want most of those people to ever come back to our house ever again.
Yeah.
We went to your party and I was like, I don't know anyone here. I don't see anyone I don't like. Like, yeah. You guys have a really great circle.
Well, what's interesting about my party is I've got drug dealers, strippers, escorts, surgeons, attorneys, millionaires. Like, I've got every genre of people.
But they're all the same.
And I love them the same.
And they're all really nice, happy
and
people. That's
because
what
I it's found. All about vibes.
Yeah.
Good vibes, good energy. And I don't think that you have to be a surgeon to have good vibes. I know escorts that I love as much as I love anybody.
Yeah.
They're beautiful, amazing people.
Yeah.
Or drug dealers. Beautiful, amazing people.
That's exactly what we're talking about today. And that quote you read was, no matter your religion or what you do in life, you deserve to be loved.
Absolutely.
And it's all about how you treat others and the who you are as a person. Deb, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for who you are as a person. Tell John, thank you. You guys are amazing hosts and friends, and we've really enjoyed not just being around you at parties and dinners and different things, but watching who you are.
Mm.
And again, I'm going to say this again. Betty and I have said, hey, we want to be like Deb and John as parents and as a couple, as hosts and friends. And we can tell the people that want to be around you as well.
Yeah.
That they, a lot of the people crave what you give them, which is love and acceptance. And unconditional love. And that's really the theme of this podcast today was we've talked about mushroom trips and Molly. We've talked about parenting. We've talked about sexuality. And at the root of this is Deb being a very loving human being and being loved by someone who helped you become who you are. And that's John. And I think that's beautiful. And I really, really appreciate it. And I hope everyone who listens to this podcast can strive to love more and judge less.
Yeah.
That's really what life is about.
Absolutely.
If we could only do that.
Love more, judge less.
That's
absolutely.
That's going to be the title of this podcast. Be like Deb and John, love more, judge less.
I love it. And awesome. That's actually freedom.
That is.
Yep.
That is. And what the world would be like if, or what our families would be like.
Right.
What our relationship would be like if we could do that more.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on.
Deb, thank you.
It was a pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
Okay.